And tonight I want to go back to a subject that was brought up a couple of weeks ago. Not last week, but the week before that. We were talking about how we would respond if there were differences of understanding within our congregation. And somebody said, well, what would we do if we had someone who thought that women could teach? How would you respond? And I kind of casually slipped over that, and I should not have. That requires a lot more discussion. So that's what I want to discuss tonight, is how we respond when there are, well, when there are differences within a local congregation. Now, let it be said that we're talking about differences that arise within our congregation. We're not talking about the fact that there may be differences that arise across the entire brotherhood. That doesn't concern me. The only thing I'm concerned about is our response when differences arise within a local congregation. And there will be differences. And the differences arise because this is what we concluded last week, every person has to be fully persuaded in their own mind about what the biblical information says. So if I read the Bible, that is not a guarantee that, even though it can be understood, it's not a guarantee that I'm going to see everything that Bob sees. Does that make sense? Okay. There are going to be differences. Now, when those differences arise in the local congregation, we have to find a way to be together even though there are differences that arise within the congregation. So how do we do that? One approach, and it's kind of the approach that I'm afraid I left the impression that we would do, is if there was a difference, we would just say to somebody who had a difference in understanding, well, you need to go somewhere else, because that's not what we do here. Okay. I don't think that's a biblical approach. I think a more biblical approach is to say that we will so organize our corporate activities, the things that we do as a church that everybody participates in, we will so organize that everybody can participate given their understanding. Okay? We want everybody to be able to participate. In other words, we don't want to do something as a group that would mean that you can't do that because you don't think that there's a biblical warrant for doing it. It could be that you can't see any biblical warrant for the church coming together and then dividing into classes. And you can't participate if we divide into classes because you don't think that the Bible authorizes that. You don't think that, you think that that's going beyond what the Bible authorizes. Okay, so how would you respond? If we're going to organize ourselves so that everyone can participate, how would you organize yourself? What would you do? What would your response be?
Offer up the different ways that we do classes. That, Sunday mornings, this is how we do it, but Sunday evenings, we don't. We gather in one place. Wednesday nights, we gather in one place all together.
That's okay.
You know, so I mean, you could just show them other that this is what we do on a Sunday morning, but we do have other times where, you know, we, so maybe you would feel more comfortable, and you could also offer, if it's important to them, and say we meet Sunday evenings, and we also do offer the communion for those that miss it in the morning, because it's something that's important to us, and we know that this is the main reason why we are here, and
right.
So.
So that's a good response. We have different assembly times, and you may not be able to participate in the Sunday morning assembly time when we divide up, but you could participate on Sunday evening when we don't divide up. Okay? That's a good response. What else might we do?
Not divide.
I have a question. Some of the pattern of the early church, I think, came from not the worship, but the way the Jews did things. Now, in the Jewish community, didn't the young people have special school or places that they learned separately from the adults until they reached adulthood?
Yeah, but yeah, they did. And they were generally termed synagogue schools.
So that was essentially like Bible classes.
Well, but it's not, because when the Jewish community gathered together, they didn't divide. So I can see that both ways. I mean, that's a reasoning process that we would go through. We're going to have to talk about this.
We could study with them. Maybe they're right. Maybe
okay.
This is the wrong thing that we're doing, and I just have never thought about it because this is what I grew up with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So study with them, and maybe they have a really good point. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Yes.
So we say, okay, we're going to openly air the discussion about this. Like you said, we need to study about this. And everybody has to be able to participate in the study. Okay? You can't go into the study saying, well, we've always done it this way, so we're going to convince you that this is right.
Right.
That's not going to work.
No,
that's not study.
No, but you could study one-on-one with them, too.
You could study one-on-one.
Yeah.
That's true. But that still, the fact that I'm studying one-on-one doesn't allow them to participate.
Well, no, but you, isn't that okay?
I'm sorry?
He wants us to participate. That's the point.
Yeah, you want them to be able to participate.
You could study with them, whether it's one-on-one, or I wouldn't want them to feel ganged up on that all of us are coming at them to, we all believe this way, you don't. I wouldn't want that, so I'm thinking maybe a one-on-one or a two-on-one or
okay.
It doesn't matter, I don't know.
Okay, that's a possibility, and that's a good way to approach it.
One thing we could do is to say, let's study this out and see what examples that we have, and we can see where young women are supposed to teach the younger women, and we can see where the mother or our father teaches, and if the elders think it's right too, that has a great deal of with it, because we're under the eldership, and so whatever they decide is right, unless we really disagree, then we go to them. But let's discuss this and bring out the scriptures why we do this.
Okay, let's hold on to the idea of what the role of the eldership is for the moment. And yes, we have to discuss this. And you're right, there is a sense in which we could, I think, my understanding is that we can divide, okay? So, I can present my side that we can divide, that I believe the biblical information would suggest that we can. Somebody else may not see that, right?
Mm-hmm. Like Kim said, we could not divide. We could stay in one thing. But,
okay.
But at the same time.
So is it possible?
Yeah.
The only thing, if you do not divide,
and you want people to participate, how could a five-year-old participate in a grown-up class?
They can't.
They can't. Right.
But I'll tell you the argument that they would make. Those people are not Christians.
They're not.
A five-year-old is not a Christian.
Well, we're training them.
We're training them. But what we're training them to do is to search out biblical information.
Exactly.
Right? So I have made that argument. And yes, I have worshiped with people who thought that the Bible didn't authorize us to come together and then divide. And so they wanted everybody to stay together. Okay? And the point that they made is fathers are given a responsibility to teach their children, not the church. So what do we do in the meantime? We're going to study, okay? And we shouldn't be afraid of studying. It should be a question that we really discuss.
I would think that if I went somewhere else and I didn't agree with what they were doing, I would either remove myself from that congregation if I don't feel comfortable there and I think they're doing wrong. I would study with them. And if I still felt like they were wrong, I wouldn't go there.
Okay, the shortcut that I took to get to exactly the point that you're making. But that's not a good, I skipped over a bunch of steps, okay?
Well, but I think what Vicki is suggesting is this is the person that holds that belief. That person makes that decision.
Right.
What you had presented was that you would make that decision for them and say, well, you probably should go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference in that.
Yeah.
The thing that that concerns me with these kinds of discussions and these kinds of issues, and you can think of all kinds of issues, women teaching, dividing into classes, taking the Lord's Supper with one cup. I mean, there's issues. Instrumental music. I mean, there's just tons of these issues that can come up. And usually, from my experience, what I've seen in local congregations, when this happens, it's usually the more, and I don't mean this term purgatively at all, but the more conservative approach, or the approach that is probably the most restrictive, usually takes preeminence so that everybody can participate. And so we kind of shortcut that way without really tackling these hard issues and having really hard conversations. Sometimes we take a shortcut. And then what, in my experience, from times past, I don't know if I've ever experienced it here, but then you end up kind of getting the church bullies who, we're going to do it my way. You know, it's going to be my way. And it happens. That's human nature. People do that. It's not right. It's just that that's the way people do. So I think we have to be really careful. But we also don't need to have a homogenous group either, where we have to agree with every single thing down the line, because there's a lot of judgment in here. God leaves a lot to us and a lot to local congregations. And we don't all have to see everything the same way. But in terms of the corporate worship, of what we do corporately, those are really difficult things. And I think that's why, you know, you talked about the role of the elders, that's why they should be men of wisdom and men of understanding, so that they can search out the scriptures and they can study them and try to study it anew and fresh when someone comes in with something like that, and not just say, nope, that's just the way we do it here. You know, you need men with wisdom and with discernment who can really study that out. And like you said, maybe we've been doing it wrong the whole time. You know, maybe you just don't know, and you have to be open to that, and you have to, and I'm talking about any issue. I mean, all kinds of issues. There are just so many things that can kind of fit into this discussion.
Yeah, Carol.
There are some things that are set, the Lord has designated specifically. Those are almost black and white issues. And then there are a whole bunch of gray issues that one person can be young in the faith, another can be old, one person can be totally off base because they were raised another way. And the thing is that when you have a black and white thing, it ought to ought to be pretty easily settled. And when it's a gray thing, then what we have to be able to do is to agree that you can think your way, and I can think my way, and I won't infringe on you. And so, with the Sunday morning where you said somebody, well, they don't think they should divide up for classes, there's an alternative to that. And then the alternative isn't that we quit doing what we're doing so that person who's coming to visit or just moved here can learn to gel with what we believe. And we can study, but it's a gray area. And if you love God, then...
They don't perceive it as gray.
No.
They tend to perceive it as black and white.
But you, unless God said specifically, it's a gray area, and that's where you get interpretations. And that's why the person...
What about?
I cannot insist that way.
But what about when God is silent? He didn't say, don't divide into classes.
He didn't say,
divide into classes.
He didn't say, use the songbook.
He didn't say anything. The important thing is, if God didn't say it, don't do it. That's what we teach about silence. If God didn't say, don't do it.
Well, then their argument with this point too, I'm sorry I jumped in, is because we had this conversation and these discussions, is that the example that you see of the New Testament church gathering, they gathered as a group, as a whole group, and you don't ever have an example of just saying, okay, well, the kids can go out to the stable and, you know, and the adults can go back in this room, and then the young people go here, and all, you know, they didn't do that, that we have example of. And so they look at Scripture as example. The only time that I think that I can see where perhaps a portion of the church came together was when there were a group of people who were Christians who were praying in the household, and Peter came to the door. We don't have any idea. I don't think that was a church gathering. We don't have any idea if that was an entire church, if it was just a select group of, you know, Christians that I just, you know, called all my friends or sent out an email and said, you guys come on over and let's pray together. You know, and we don't know. There's no example of kind of what that group looked like other than
they were
Christians were gathered to pray together. We don't know if it was an entire church or if it was just a group of Christians. Yeah. And so, you know, that's the only time that I know of that perhaps a group smaller than a local congregation got together for any kind of an effort. I can't think of any other examples in the Scriptures.
Okay.
I can think of one practical is because if you're really trying to study and you in if your child acts up and everything else, we can't understand what we're doing. Whereas if the child is in another room learning about Jesus in his own learning habit where he can learn about Jesus, that's one thing. It causes confusion if you have a whole bunch of little kids that are not, quote, controlled. I can't listen. That's not a good one, but that's one thing I thought of.
Okay, that would be an argument that you could make, but still, somebody's going to respond and say, well, that's just a practical argument that you made up in your own mind. God didn't say that.
Well, I guess I'm just real practical, aren't I?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just we have to understand it. Yeah.
I guess I've been to lots of different churches and things like that. And so, but if you never open up this and you're sitting in a congregation, honestly, I don't want to be really a part of it because they only half do it or they pick apart it or... you know, I like the other aspects of it. Like, I love a choir. It's so beautiful to hear. But at the same time, it's just like, I grew up in this church, I like this church, it's no whole, you open it up, you read it, we discuss it, we talk about it, and that's where we get our stuff. I mean, that's where we get our knowledge and our...
Okay.
And so,
and it's,
all
it's
that
what
flashy,
informs
I
our
feel
practice.
Like all that flashy stuff is flashy. It's not, to me, it's appeasing everybody because...
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you so much.
This is print for you, then. I'm still...
I mean, you know, I don't know. I guess I just, I mean, yes, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of fun and exciting to go to a different church to see what's out there because I think that we should, you know, be out there and see what's out there. But, you know, I just feel like maybe some of these churches are just appeasing the people, man. They're not, you know, they're not there for God. They're just like, how many people can we get?
Right.
Coffee and donuts in the morning. Well, you know, we'll.
Well,
have
you
to,
could,
and
you know, you could go. You could go back 100 years, and there was horrible disagreement about whether we ought to sing with 4-part harmony, and whether we ought to sing those Stamps Baxter quartet kinds of songs. You know, where
right.
you get. All these different parts and everything's going on. And people say, no, we ought to be singing in unison. That biblical information is they sang the Psalms in unison.
It doesn't say that. It just said they sang.
That's true, but they sang Psalms. And that's the way that they sang Psalms. We can know that.
I mean, instruments always
we,
help.
How do we know that?
They can't sing.
If you go back and look at Jewish practice. And they chanted, and they typically, if you look at music, what we would call music, they're singing, in the first century, they chanted a monotone note. They didn't, there was no melody. You sang a monotone note.
Well, I guess you wouldn't need a songbook then.
Would you? No, you wouldn't. You would need your psalms. Okay, and there was an uproar when I think it was Isaac Watt was the first person that took secular poetry and sang it in church. And if you look through our books, there's a lot of stuff that was written by Isaac Watt. He was a poet. Okay, and people would say there is no warrant for you to make up words. We ought to sing the Psalms. So,
one example that I thought about was if the main reason that we come together on the Lord's Day is to partake of the Lord's Supper, why do we have classes at all then? Because it's convenient time for all of us. We're all together and we separate into groups. And that's what, maybe that's not a good reason, but remember when Paul preached all night, where were the kids? Were they there too? You don't know these things because you're not told, really, except that they usually did have a study group going on all the time because they were teaching because they needed to learn what they were supposed to do.
Right, but that wasn't just kids. That was everybody.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if there was any kids there or not. I have no clue, but I know that it was the longest sermon that I'm not sure that I wouldn't fall asleep and fall out the window too. So.
You know, we can come up with all kinds of issues. We can look at biblical information, but this congregation, as well as every congregation in this country, and probably across the world, over the last 4 years, have dealt with something very much like this, with the way that we dealt with the pandemic. And there were times that this eldership chose for us not to gather in person. They tried to come up with another way for us to gather. There were other congregations that went a different route. There were some congregations that said, nope, their little thing was faith over fear. We're going to just gather no matter what, because this says we're going to gather. And we're going to do it in person, and you know, whatever the government says. So we had to struggle and grapple with those kinds of issues in terms of our corporate gathering. And so this isn't really far-fetched from us. I mean, we have to deal with this kind of stuff all the time. And, you know, on a personal note, yeah, there are hiccups when you do that kind of stuff, but by and large, I think this eldership handled it as well as you could. I mean, sure, there were blips and hiccups, and would I have made a different decision? Perhaps, but I'm not one of the elders. And so, so that's the kind of thing that we have to grapple with and we have to deal with. And I think that God expects us to have our emotions involved, but he also expects our intellect. He expects us to go into this. And the other thing that he expects that I think we did pretty well is show one another grace and mercy. Because, like I said, there were times that maybe the decision wasn't what I thought it should be, but I needed to show grace and mercy. I needed to show my brothers and sisters and understanding. And so sometimes that's just what we do when we come to biblical information with a slightly different understanding. What does gathering mean? What does it mean when the church came together? And that's like the, you know, can we divide again? Can we have, and is doing it via Zoom divisive, you know, or is it more inclusive? And they're just all of these things that you grapple with. So this isn't foreign to us. This is something that we've had to deal with very recently.
Okay. So now, I think there's a second layer to this. Okay. And that we're going to talk about multiple layers. The second layer is sometimes what I understand doesn't implicate the group. I'll give you an example. I registered as a conscientious objector. The fact that I registered as a conscientious objector and refused to bear arms in the service of the country, I would have served, but in a different capacity. I would not take up arms. That didn't mean that because I believed that, you were implicated in what I understood. Okay? Ted might have concluded you can serve in the military. Bob might have concluded you can serve in the military. I might have concluded I can't serve in the military. But what I conclude doesn't impact anybody else. I think if you go back to the first century, the first century, or you go back to the 1800s in our country, the question was slavery. Can you own slaves and be a Christian? Some people did. It was common in the South for Christians to own slaves. It was not at all common in the North, but by the same token, it wasn't common outside of the church either in the North. Now, understand that since only about 1.5% of the population were slave owners, you could worship at a church in the South and nobody there owned slaves. It would be almost unlikely that there would be a slave owner in your congregation. Because the percentage of people that owned slaves was very small, regardless of what we think about it. The percentage of people that owned slaves was very small.
Yeah, but you can find slave owners in the Bible all over the
place. Yes,
you can. A different culture, but still, I think that's an individual choice, actually, not so much. I don't know, but at least you can find some scripture about slave owners, and it always says to serve your master as you were serving God, so to speak. You're to be under his command.
Okay. Yes, Kirsten.
I feel like slavery's always been around, but they were indentured servants. They were, I need to get out of here. Well, you're going to work for me for 7 years, and then you're going to go on your way.
That's what
and that's
was
kind of, that's, I mean, way back, that's like, that's how I believe. And then, you know, there were the good ones, and then, you know, there weren't the very nice ones. You know, everybody had their pricing, but I feel like the North had their indentured servants. I mean, that's how half the people came across on the Mayflower, or, you know, or started this. It was because they needed passage out of wherever they were going, and they didn't have the fundage. So I'm going to work for you for a certain amount of time, and then I'm going to go. And then
right.
It turned into, you know, then it turned into something completely, you know, different. But I always, I mean, that wasn't good either. But I mean, it kind of was, because you're serving a purpose, you're paying your debt, and then you're moving on. If you were allowed to move on, sometimes it just, you know, escalates. But
yeah, and the definition of slavery changes over time, and changes with individuals. And there, no doubt there were some individuals who said, yes, I'll let you work for me for 7 years to pay off your debt, and then you're free to go.
But I also felt like slavery allowed their people to go to church. I mean, that was something that they allowed, that it was a Sunday, you go to church, and then you come back and you work. They allowed them to go, though. I mean, and so...
Right.
You know, I don't know where we're going with this.
Well, my point is, there is this layer of that overlays differences. Some people might say you can't own slaves. Some people would say it's okay to own slaves. Somehow they have to be together. And in that case, whether or not you chose to own slaves doesn't, if I choose to own slaves, that doesn't implicate you. Or if you choose to own them, that doesn't implicate me. It's not a corporate activity.
It can be if it's the whole congregation, because the Amish were...
Well, I suppose it could be.
Because they were all conscientious objectors, they were held against it as a community. So in that, even that individual thing, it's not an individual thing, it's a congregational thing.
Right.
But necessary inference, and the fact that eat meat or don't eat meat, you have to decide. And when you're done with doing the teaching, you can agree to disagree but still worship together. Or if somebody can't agree, then, and you've done your studying, then it's like Kirsten said, if that church is not for you, you don't, not your business to change the whole church. It's not the church's business to bend over backwards to somebody. If it's a whole group of people, then that's where you end up with splits. But I think the fact that you take the other person into consideration, and you don't diss them, you respect the fact that they have a different point of view, and then you're both able to do that. Not speaking out of turn, but when Carol White was here, the marriage, divorce, remarriage thing was really big, and he sat down with Jerry, and they could agree that so long as they didn't bind it on one another, that he could be a member here and then an elder. And at some point in time, because he had so many ties to Texas and to the other area, he got to the place where he could not do that anymore, and he resigned as an elder, and then didn't worship with us, because in his heart he was convicted the other way.
Okay.
You know, the Apostle Paul gives a couple of examples of exactly what you're talking about. One is meat sacrificed to idols, and then really gets into the respect that we show to one another, because we don't want to cause someone to sin or cause them to offend. And by that mean, it doesn't mean, well, I'm offended, I don't like them. It means that it causes them to sin and to participate in that. And the other one is the observance of holidays or special days and holy days. And so he uses those two examples. And those things, I think, he's talking to individual Christians, and those are things that we have the liberty to make those decisions about that don't impact the corporate worship. So I think that he has given some good examples. I think the slavery thing is kind of provocative in a way, just because it has changed so much over time. And what we think of in our brains when we think of slavery. Anyway, so I just think, you know, you look at the scriptures and what the Apostle Paul said, he gave those two examples. And I think they're great examples for how we can conduct ourselves and make those judgments for ourselves that doesn't impact the fellowship that we're a part of.
Right.
Just one thing. We had two women that I can think of who I sent Christmas cards to in the first year or so that I was a member, not even knowing that there was a disagreement in anything, you understand. One of them thanked me for the card and told me that she didn't celebrate. And the other one cut me off at the ankles and basically made me feel like I shouldn't, that I'd offended her down to her toenails. So it's the attitude at which we go about this and putting our brethren above our, and I think when you put somebody above you, then you have the right attitude, and it gets solved one way or the other. You can work it out. And you can worship together, or somebody decides they need to go someplace else.
Okay. So let me move on to perhaps another layer. And we've kind of touched on this. Sometimes there are things that we are convinced don't matter. And then there are other things that that some people are convinced that they matter. Okay? For instance, are we going to use one container to take the supper? Following the Lord's example, when he instituted the supper, the juice was in one container. He said, now, distribute this among yourselves. So they poured it into their individual containers. But they started with one. Okay. Other people would say, it doesn't matter. In that case, how are we going to approach the it doesn't matter and the it makes a difference disagreement, difference in understanding? Yeah.
That's an interesting example, because in a small congregation, it's easy to do it either way, for one cup or from several. Yet a great big congregation, it's literally impossible to do it from a single cup.
Well, they didn't do it from a single cup. They started with one container, and then they divided it among themselves.
Are you talking about the Lord's Supper?
I'm sorry?
Where's that scripture? Just so I can read. I've never read that before.
The scripture that I'm thinking of.
You're talking about Luke 22:17.
Yeah.
So after Jesus took the cup, he gave thanks and said, take this cup, and share it among yourselves.
Yeah, but that doesn't say they poured it in different.
If you look at other translations, it will say, and divide it among yourselves.
That was the New International.
You have to look at all four of the different records of the institution of the supper.
The King James says divide it among yourselves.
He said divide it among yourselves.
Yeah.
If you have 300 people in a congregation, that container has to be awfully big for you to be able to.
Okay, we start with a big container, and then we divide it into smaller containers. Okay.
Well, we used to, because we used to have those trays, and you had to have
the
little cups. And
so the Greek word share there is diamerizo, which means to distribute, means to divide. Doesn't mean to share. So the Greek word means to divide. Okay.
Right. But they still started. Jesus started with one cup.
Right.
And he said, "Divide this among yourselves." So we could do that. Be fairly easy to say. One person from each row, bring a container up here, fill your container, take it back to your row. Distributed among all the people in your row.
Meaning drinking from that same cup.
No, distributed.
No.
You know, everybody has their cup. Pour some here.
But how is that not? I realize that, but how is that not sharing?
What is
it?
It
is sharing. I'm not saying it's not sharing.
Having individual containers sharing the
cup. It's sharing.
More so.
There's no difference.
Yeah, sharing and dividing, we're getting to the same point.
Okay.
But some people would say that, you know, if he said share it, then that means that he took the cup and I took a drink, you took a drink, you took a drink.
Right.
Whereas dividing it means you take that cup and then you divide it. Dividing it means that you portioned it out.
Right.
So, and if you portion it out, that's a different idea. That's like pouring some into each individual's cup.
Which is what we used to do with that big, huge tray, and we had all those little individuals.
It all came out of one big bottle,
and
we divided it.
Right, but nobody drank
it. But you
didn't
do it during service.
What?
You didn't do it during the service.
We could have.
Just put it in more time.
A lot more time.
And I have worshipped at a place where they said Jesus started with one loaf, and he broke it. Okay.
Well, we had a cracker, and we all broke off the cracker.
No, we don't.
No, we did. We used to.
But we really didn't. That never started out in the assembly as one piece of bread.
It was always two or three or four, because it was separate bowls.
If you had five trays,
right,
there were five pieces of bread. We never saw it as one piece of bread.
We worshipped where there was one, and the person's waiting on the table divided it between all of the serving things, and then it was distributed.
It was
so, and the same thing with, you know,
divided, and then they divided it before.
Of course, when you have
so that there's one.
I like to see you do that when your congregation is 2,000 strong.
Yeah,
I think that's the
kind of conversation that you have is what is practical and does the practicality of it violate what's important. Some people are going to say, that's critical that Jesus had one cup and he said, here, take this and divide it among you. And so they started with one cup. Some people are going to really hold that and take it very literally and say, and then other people are going to say, it really doesn't matter. And in fact, I think that's the position that this group has taken. Because right now we have individual servings. We don't know where that came from initially. You know?
It came from one container.
well, we don't know. We have no idea, you know, the packaging and however that happened. And
yeah, thank you.
So I just think that
that
this group has determined that that's not a critical element, but somebody else might determine that it is a critical element.
Well,
okay.
I feel like Catholics, don't they drink out of one cup and everybody like files in and the
no,
they don't have that. They just have the
wafers. There is one other conception, because if that was Jesus's cup, you cannot drink a cup. And the other thing is, you're going to be really, really strict. You'd have to drink out of the same cup that Jesus did, and that's not possible.
Well, No, he distributed it.
I know he did, but it doesn't mean that he passed it around and drank out of it.
Okay. Those are all discussions that we have to have. Okay. And it's okay to have those discussions.
That's the point. I have drank out of one now, everybody else drank out of. And I don't
want to
go there again.
No.
Hey, I worshipped at a place in Boston Bar where they used one container, and everybody took a drink from that one container. Wait a minute. I did. I sat in the front row for just that reason. And they took the cup all the way to the back and started in the back. I was the last person that got it.
When people say they want to be exactly like first century Christians, how come they drive automobiles?
Exactly. We're inconsistent. Exactly. We're human beings.
Okay.
Aren't they meeting in houses?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Those are all good discussion points, but you have to get back to the basics of the discussion. Can we have it?
Can we have what?
The discussion.
A discussion about can we have it? And then
and still get along.
And then understand that once we have, as a group, we have 100 people. Everybody here has basically come to the same understanding about using one container. That might change. And then it might change back. And then it might change. And then it might change back. Okay?
That's an awful lot of elders you're going through.
No, it's not. The way that you did it before doesn't matter. It is of no importance that we've always done it that way.
So would we still be doing it had we not gone through COVID?
Would we still be
doing
it?
Would we still be doing it back from passing the train?
Oh, absolutely. I think so.
Yeah, probably.
Tradition is the hardest thing to change.
Yeah.
And that would not willy-nilly have changed just because somebody decided to start marketing single portions. We would all thought they were nuts.
Yeah.
So it was a matter of circumstance.
Had you ever, how did you find those? Because I find them genius. I wish I would have, tapped in onto that.
What's that?
The little elements that we have.
Church supply houses.
Yeah, church supply houses. And the reason they developed them initially, because I've seen them around for years, is that if you were going to take the Lord's Supper to someone who couldn't be there, then somebody from church could take it, I'm thinking about Pat. That gets into another conversation.
Yeah. That's another conversation.
Yeah. But that's how those things came about.
It's a completely different animal who brought up. I don't remember, it was Paul, I think, was teaching Christians, said, remember the traditions. The word traditions are important. What were they?
It's what he delivered. Okay.
Gospel.
It wasn't tradition the way you think of the word tradition. It was what he had delivered. So, this may change over time. It's not like we've studied it, we've reached a conclusion, we're done. Somebody else is going to come into the group and you're going to have to rethink it. Okay.
And I don't think we should be threatened by that.
No.
That we should welcome that. But it's a scary prospect. It always is. And like Ted said, some of the hardest things to change are those traditions. We're creatures of habit. And, like my dad used to say, the only person who likes change is a wet baby. And we don't like change. We don't want to change. We get kind of set in our ways, and it's comfortable for us. And when somebody challenges that, even if we know, we can even acknowledge, this is our tradition. And I know that it's not binding, I get it, but it's our tradition. We like it that way.
Right.
And I think as Christians, we have to be really, really careful that we don't treat each other that way, that we just don't sit. You say, well, this is the way I've always, like Vicki said, this is the way I was raised, this is the way I've always done it, and this is the way it's going to be forevermore. And I think we have to be really careful with that and just be open to studying and thinking about things and challenging some of our thought process and challenging our own beliefs and how did we come to them and is it tradition and am I just relying on the comfort of that tradition and I don't have a basis behind it. And I've got an example, you guys might not agree with it, but a church that we worshiped at, they clapped with some of the songs, if they were really, upbeat and stuff, clapping. So I took Mom there one time, and we took her every time. When Mom started to, after my dad died, we were worshiping at one group, and she was worshiping, so we'd switch off every other week, and I'd take her to Bray, and then I'd take her over to Canyon, take her to Bray. So the first time she'd gone over to Canyon with us, there were some people that were clapping. And so I got in the car, and I said, well, Mom, what'd you think? And she said, well, I don't know about that clapping business. And I said, is it because it's something you're not used to, or do you think that there's something in Scripture that teaches against that? And she said, she was so sweet, she goes, well, I don't know, Daddy's not here for me to ask.
Oh, no.
And I said, I know. And I said, it's hard, isn't it? And she said, yeah. And so I didn't say anything more. I didn't, one way or the other. And a few weeks later, she was worshiping. And she was I'm like,
whoa.
So we get in the car, and I said, well, Mom, I guess you decided that. And she said, you know what? I studied the Scriptures, and I went in there, and I really looked. And I studied, and I studied, and I don't see where God says that we can't do that. And if you're so moved when you're worshiping, and as long as it's not disruptive, and I said, okay, whatever, pull your boat, Mom.
Okay.
So, that was my example.
I would like to make a funny comment. It isn't really, but we had a sermon one time, and he said, you cannot bring things to the knothole, because it doesn't say not to, you can't bring it in. So I thought that was a good sermon, because it's something to think about.
Yeah, it's just like classes.
Yeah.
Bringing it in through the knothole. Now, let me go on. One more layer, and we're almost out of time, so we've got to talk about this. What's the role of the elders in all of this?
Guidance.
Okay, guidance.
Shepherding.
What does shepherding mean?
Watching out for ourselves.
Okay.
Making sure we get to the good food.
Don't they make the final decision?
And not into the river.
Do they make the final decision?
Is that
biblical information that they make a decision and you accept it? Or do you have to be fully persuaded in your mind?
I think you are the one that needs to be fully persuaded in your mind. Because you've got to live with that decision.
Well, we have plenty of examples of that just in our congregation with people who don't want to do what the elders are teaching and leading and decide that they don't want to be here anymore.
That's right.
I used to be one of those.
Free to leave.
Very disrespectful person right here to the elders. But I've grown up.
Well, I'll tell you what my perception is. That the elders manage these discussions. Okay? They don't determine what the outcome is going to be. And it's not like they referee the discussion and say, okay, you won and you lost. That's not the role. The role of the elders is to manage the discussion. And when somebody gets out of line and says it's going to be my way or the highway, then they have to tell them. We don't allow that. That's not the discussion that we want. And they have done that.
That's what shepherding is. It's taking you to the green pastures, taking you to the water, making sure that you're not falling, going into the water at the wrong spot, trying to save you. That's the shepherding part of it.
And there are sheep that leave the herd because they wander off. So you have no control over that. So.
Well, we were at, and I'm not just being disrespectful because I appreciate your elders and I think you do a good job. So, but we were asked, I wasn't asked if I wanted to have Sunday off. Maybe you did, but I don't remember that. Or if we wanted to do Zoom when we did, because of COVID, or we wanted to close the church building. But it was their decision, and it was a good one. I thought because of COVID. I didn't rise up and have a fit.
I agree with you. I think it's reasonable when the congregation the choir in somewhere in Washington decided that they needed to practice, and they thought they took all the safeguards, and they had like 10 or 12 people in the choir who died of COVID because of the exposure that was early on. Now, I thought that was very prudent of the elders to have decided that for us, to not risk our...
But they didn't get it. I will say that the elders said, we will see grace for those who disagree. Okay? And if you are not willing to show that grace for people that disagree with you, then you have to leave. And it's not because of the belief that you have. You have to leave because you will not show that grace to other people. Okay? So that's what I think is the role of the elders, is to manage these discussions so that they don't get out of hand. And yes, they have an input too. Okay? And they have more of an input. That's not the way to say it. They are wise, okay? And so their words carry more weight.
Double portions.
Their words carry more weight, but they are not the determinant. It's like Kim's mom said, Daddy's not here. I can't ask him. That's not what the determinant is. You have to be
all,
in your own mind.
They're supposed to feed us as a flock, and we are the flock. And so we would trust him because the qualifications for an elder are very, that's right in there. So you allow yourself to be led by that shepherd because he's supposed to know what's best for you. And they usually do. That's why we have more than one elder, for example. You don't have just one guy running the whole show, you know, but we agreed to be under his leadership, really. So we have to accept that. Or talk it out with him and see if you disagree, then go talk to him.
Okay. Okay. We're out of time. Thank you for the discussion. Spirited discussion. I think it was worthwhile. I think we probably learned something tonight that we might not have thought of prior to tonight.
One thing, you always have to have communication. If you stop communication, you have nothing.
That's right.
And problems start.
The elders have to be the people that know that you have a problem with this. If you don't see a warrant for having Bible classes, they have to be the guys that know that.
But you have to tell somebody.
Communication's always two-way street.